go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Proud to announce to you that there is no such thing as global climate catastrophe. That's why, earlier today, here in wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia, just outside the studio window, did I mention on the first day of February? Yes. That's why I heard a spring bird chirping in a tree. Ordinarily, that would be cause for celebration. Except it's the first day of February. Smack dab in the middle of the teeth of winter. And of course, a brutal storm is blowing across the Midwest and taking aim at the East Coast. More or less north of us here, we shouldn't be hit by too much of it, just a little of the usual annoying snow. But a bird, or as Roger Rabbit would say,
a tweeting bird.
Yeah, a tweeting bird. Do I think, Marty asks, do I think that Punxsutawney Phil will see his shadow tomorrow? God, I hope not. But I have a feeling, given where Punxsutawney is and what's headed toward Punxsutawney, he ain't gonna see no shit. He gonna run back in, don't come out 6 more weeks. That's actually the punchline to a great old joke that I'm not going to tell. But at any rate, I hope everybody in the listening audience being presently hit by the vile and nasty ravages of this blizzard of 2011 is safe, warm, and well. I sincerely do. It's a little weird here, and it always, well, I'm just glad to be on the air tonight, let's put it that way. Why? Because I got up this morning and there was a little fire in the studio, and no, it has nothing to do with me smoking in bed or in the studio. Apparently something happened at the water heater, which is also back here. And the damn thing caught fire. And I'm glad that we got to it when we did. It still stinks like hell back here, but everything seems to be okay, absent the fact that, well, it'll be a while before we have hot water again. Just saying. Just another day in the life of, you know, and I don't put this out there as, you know, oh, poor pitiful me. It's just another day in the life of working class America. This kind of stuff happens. It's the fact that our betters don't give a tinker's damn that this kind of stuff happens that's particularly frustrating, if you know what I mean, and I think you do. It's 4 minutes past the hour. We do begin this this Tuesday evening program, and there's a couple of things that were sort of on my mind, one left over from last night and another one that just sort of popped its head up today, along with a couple of other things, you know, dangerous, murderous right-wingers and so forth. But I was having an email exchange last night after the program, and I was we were discussing a little bit about Mark Twain. And I've been reading The Innocents Abroad because in 1867, some 144 years ago, Mr. Samuel Langhorne Clemens boarded a boat, a ship. It was the steamship Quaker City, and it traversed the Atlantic, and he and a bunch of Americans took in old Europe and the Holy Land. And it's a brilliant, the publication of the book, which was sold by subscriptions, kind of the way, well, you know, kind of the way a lot of people do podcasts. Everything old is new again. Propelled him to stardom. Fame and fortune, if you will. And he, the book is incredibly funny. You can find it online. It's quite easy. But the observations are both humorous and, in some cases, filled with pathos. And throughout, filled with the observational powers that Samuel Langhorne Clemens brought to his world that made him a man not just a century or a century and a half, but probably another century beyond us ahead of his time. We, in many ways, we still may be catching up with Mark Twain. And so it was, after having read that, I ran across a story this evening in preparation for the show over at Think Progress. Republican National Committee hawking Reagan gear to pay down Steele's debt. The Republican Party is now fundraising on the back of the corpse of Ronald Reagan. On their weird little website, they will, for $25, sell you a Reagan bobblehead, which, for cerebral activity, is rather difficult to tell from the original. I'll never forget when I was a young man, still living at home, getting ready to go to college and that kind of thing. We had this adorable little Yorkshire Terrier. His name was Nicholas. And he had a chew toy. It was a squeaky toy of a bust of Ronald Reagan. And we played catch with him with it. And when he, and sometimes, you know, it would be out of sight. And my dad, the anniversary of whose passing I marked today, 4 years ago, my dad would look at him and say, "Nicholas, where's that old empty-headed Republican president of yours?" And Nicholas would, you know, that's a fairly complex bit of speech. It's a little bit different from, you know, "Fetch! Nicholas, where's that dirty old empty-headed Republican president of yours?" Because he was a squeaky toy, and therefore his head was, in fact, empty. And Nicholas would look up at my dad. "Oh, that." And run off and go and get it and bring it to him, and we'd all have a lovely time playing catch. And he'd grab Ronald Reagan by the head, and you know how terriers are. What a delight he was. So I couldn't help but giggle a little bit when I found out that for $25... the Republican National Committee is selling Reagan bobblehead dolls. For another $25, you can get a bag of jelly beans. For free, you can sign a birthday card to the corpse of Ronald Reagan, celebrating his 100th birthday on February the 6th. You can get a framed photo of Ronnie Reagan's inauguration for $400. Oh, yeah. But then, here's the pitch for signing the birthday card for the dead dude. February 6th, 2011, marks the 100th anniversary of President Reagan's birth in Tampico, or Tampico, Illinois. Please take a moment to sign President Reagan's 100th birthday card. After signing, please consider a contribution to the RNC to help the party elect conservative candidates committed to the ideals of President Reagan. Wonder which ideals would those be? Supporting Central American death squads that murder peasants and kill nuns and priests in broad daylight in the street? Maybe it would be supporting the ideals of doing shady, underhanded, backdoor dealings with Iran in contravention of the law, or maybe supporting right-wing death squads again in contravention to the law of the land, and then lying about it and saying, "Well, I don't remember anything, mommy." Yeah, $25 Reagan bobblehead. Because they want to elect conservative candidates committed to the ideals of President Reagan. A man who really didn't have any ideals beyond the fact that he was pretty sure that if you didn't make $100,000 a year, you were just poor. Right. Great guy. But it's weird how these things come together, because I read that story and I thought, well, damn. And there I was last night reading Mark Twain talking about the very thing. Because I was. I was at page 336 of a particular edition of The Innocents Abroad in chapter 31, which covers his visit to Pompeii. And I read the following. They had a great public bulletin board in Pompeii, a place where announcements for gladiatorial combats, elections, and such things were posted. Not on perishable paper, but carved in enduring stone. And that carved in stone part, you might recall, we've had a sort of ongoing conversation about that as well. How we preserve and pass down the accumulation of knowledge in a digitized age where everything is, where every last bit of knowledge the world has is more fragile than it has ever been in all of human history. You know, redundancy, schmundancy. If you don't have electricity, you're not reading the digitized information. But carved in enduring stone. One lady, this is, again, his trip to Pompeii in 1867. One lady, who I take it was rich and well brought up, advertised a dwelling or so to rent, with baths and all the modern improvements, and several hundred shops, stipulating that the dwellings should not be put to immoral purposes. He can find out who lived in many a house in Pompeii by the carved stone door plates affixed to them. And in the same way, you can tell who they were that occupy the tombs. Everywhere around are things that reveal to you something of the customs and history of this forgotten people. But what would a volcano leave of an American city if it once rained its cinders on it? Hardly a sign or a symbol to tell us its story. In one of these long Pompeian halls, the skeletons of a man was found with 10 pieces of gold in one hand and a large key in the other. He had seized his money and started toward the door, but the fiery tempest caught him at the very threshold, and he sank down and died. One more minute of precious time would have saved him. I saw the skeletons of a man, a woman, and two young girls. The woman had her hands spread wide apart as if in mortal terror, and I imagined I could still trace upon her shapeless face something of the expression of wild despair that distorted it when the heavens rained fire in these streets so many ages ago. The girls and the man lay with their faces upon their arms, as if they had tried to shield them from the enveloping cinders. In one apartment, 18 skeletons were found, all in sitting postures, and blackened places on the walls still mark their shapes and show their attitudes like shadows. One of them, a woman, still wore upon her skeleton throat a necklace with her name graved upon it, Julie de Diomede. But perhaps the most poetical thing Pompeii has yielded to modern research was that grand figure of a Roman soldier clad in complete armor, who, true to his duty, true to his proud name of a soldier of Rome, and full of the stern courage which had given to that name its glory, stood to his post by the city gate, erect and unflinching, till the hell that raged around him burned out the dauntless spirit it could not conquer. We never read of Pompeii, but we think of that soldier. We cannot write of Pompeii without the natural impulse to grant to him the mention he so well deserves. Let us remember that he was a soldier, not a policeman, and so praise him. Being a soldier, he stayed, because the warrior instinct forbade him to fly. Had he been a policeman, he would have stayed also, because he would have been asleep. He continues, "We came out from under the solemn mysteries of this city of the venerable past, this city which perished with all its old ways and its quaint old fashions about it, remote centuries ago when the disciples were preaching the new religion, which is as old as the hills to us now, and went dreaming among the trees that grow over acres and acres of its still buried streets and squares, till a shrill whistle and the cry of 'All aboard! Last train for Naples!' woke me up and reminded me that I belonged in the 19th century and was not a dusty mummy caked with ashes and cinders 1,800 years old. The transition was startling. The idea of a railroad train actually running to old dead Pompeii and whistling irreverently and calling for passengers in the most bustling and businesslike way was as strange a thing as one could imagine, and as unpoetical and disagreeable as it was strange. Compare the cheerful life and the sunshine of this day with the horrors of the younger Pliny saw here the 9th of November, A.D. 79, turns out it was August, when he was so bravely striving to remove his mother out of reach of harm while she begged him with all a mother's unselfishness to leave her to perish and save himself. By this time the murky darkness had so increased that one might have believed himself abroad in a blackened moonless night, or in a chamber where all the lights had been extinguished. On every hand was heard the complaints of women, the wailing of children, and the cries of men. One called to his father, another his son, and another his wife, and only by their voices could they know each other. Many in their despair begged that death would come and end their distress. Some implored the gods to succor them, and some believed that this night was the last, the eternal night which should engulf the universe. Even so it seemed to me, and I consoled myself for the coming death with reflection, 'Behold, the world is passing away.'" Twain concludes, "After browsing among the stately ruins of Rome, of Baiae, of Pompeii, and after glancing down the long marble ranks of battered and nameless imperial heads that stretch down the corridors of the Vatican, one thing strikes me with a force it never had before: the unsubstantial, unlasting character of fame. Men lived long lives in the olden time and struggled feverishly through them, toiling like slaves in oratory, in generalship, or in literature, and then laid them down and died, happy in the possession of an enduring history and a deathless name. Well, 20 little centuries flutter away, and what is left of these things? A crazy inscription on a block of stone, which snuffy antiquaries bother over and tangle up and make nothing out of but a bare name, which they spell wrong. No history, no tradition, no poetry, nothing that can give it even a passing interest. What may be left of General Grant's great name 40 centuries hence?" This in the encyclopedia for A.D. 5868, 5868, possibly. Uriah S., or Z. Grant, G-R-A-U-N-T, popular poet of ancient times in the Aztec provinces of the United States of British America, Some authors say flourished about A.D. 742, but the learned Aafufu states that he was a contemporary of Sharkspire, the English poet, and flourished about A.D. 1328, some three centuries after the Trojan War, instead of before it. He wrote, "Rock me to sleep, mother." Twain concludes, "These thoughts sadden me. I will to bed." You can see, I think, why it is that, that there seemed a little bit of serendipity between my having read that last night after the show and then finding out today that the Republican National Committee is out there selling Reagan bobblehead dolls at $25 a pop and $25 bags of jelly beans. This, by the way, is all the brainchild of Rents Priebus. You remember Rents Priebus? Rents Priebus of the Royal Imodium Mounted Dragoons and his trusty sidekick, Splat the Possum. Yeah, Rents Priebus. Because here we are, 20 years removed from the last day of the Reagan presidency, and the history has already been rewritten. He wrote, "Rock me to sleep, mother." Give it another 100 years, and Ronald Reagan will have a hatchet in his hand and be telling his father that he chopped down the cherry tree and cannot tell a lie. Ultimately, this is the greatest danger to a culture, is losing its history to a gang of unmitigated, shameless, mendacious liars. Because there is no good. There is no good, none, zero, to be said of that greasy-headed, old, half-senile criminal, Ronald Wilson Reagan. You know, we don't know where he went wrong. I happened to thumb through the book that his son, Ron, wrote marking his 100th birthday. And and I love old black and white photos from eons ago. There are photos of Ron and his Ronnie Reagan among his mates on his all-white high school football team. There are pictures of downtown Dixon, Illinois. Pictures of him in his house that was tricked out by GE for the GE television theater. And I wondered, where did he go wrong? It's so odd, the little things that shape the future. I believe it was Eddie Albert who said that that at one point Ronald Reagan had tried to join the Communist Party, but that the communists sort of blackballed him and wouldn't let him be one. And that ever after he became a virulent anti-communist. Ronald Reagan was anti-union, anti-working person, and had done nothing but sup at the trough of labor by being president of the Screen Actors Guild, having gotten all four of his porcine trotters into the trough. But nothing for anyone who would come after. Sort of like Glenn Beck, isn't it? Glenn Beck doesn't have a decent word to say for a union, and yet Glenn Beck is a member of AFTRA that has a very nice health care and pension plan. I'd love to be a member of AFTRA. I can't afford it. I don't have the initiation fee. But Glenn Beck hasn't given up his membership. He's got his. Screw the rest of us. See how it works? Yeah. Now, sure, in a way, there is much more pressing news out there today. And we will get to all of it. Jim noting via email, at least the Roman Catholic Church built St. Peter's. Maybe the Republican National Committee, the RNC, can sell Reagan indulgences to atone. Give it a decade or two, Jim. They'll be doing it. In fact, they already are. Marty noting simply and succinctly, Reagan was a rat. And he was. Not just sort of generically, you know, what a rat bastard. No, he was a dime dropper. He was a name namer. He was a stool pigeon. He was a betrayer. And we all know where Dante put the betrayers in his Inferno, don't we? Yes. Now, there are a lot of other stories out there, and we will get to them this evening. We'll take a break right now, though, and kind of set the mood a little bit. You know, we're only days away from actually heading south. Heading south and getting on the lib boat in sunny Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I can't wait. I'll be on the air tonight, and I'll be on the air tomorrow night. John Fox tells me he has plans to perhaps try to fill in on Friday if he can get the all the gear working. And that would be great. We may very well be reruns through the following week. Ben Birch will be taking care of the rerun stream. And, you know, I'm sorry about that. If John can fill, John will. He is intrepid, as I have noted on a number of occasions. Oh, but we're excited. I'm excited to feel warm sunlight. And yeah, there's a possibility. I've been thinking, you know, you go on something like this, you want to at least, you know, tick a couple of boxes off of the bucket list. The girls have been talking about horseback riding. Agnes has been talking, about wanting to swim with dolphins. You'd have to see it to believe it. She can call them up. I hear that there are whales to be seen this time of year off the coast of Grand Turk Island, which will be our first stop. I've told Agnes. She has already begun making arrangements for the whales to come up and introduce themselves. I'm married to Ellie Mae. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. But me? Well, I'm an unrepentant old literature buff. And if I can figure out a way to do it, I'm getting my butt on a boat out into the deep water, and I want to, if I can just hook one of those big fish and see it come leaping out of the sea. Damn, if I'd only been thinking about it a couple of months ago, I could have grown in my Hemingway beard. Damn, it's always something forgotten. But we're so excited. It'll be a magnificent, amazing trip for the kids. And for Agnes and me, honest to God, the closest thing that we have had in nearly 18 years of marriage to a real live honeymoon. So I will miss you guys, and I will beg your indulgence for my absence. But I have a feeling there will be just a whole bunch to talk about when we get back. So we'll take a little break and come back and more stories. This is The Horn. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Don't go away. I'm Bob. Rock me in the boat. Rock me in the boat. Rock me in the boat.
the world jamming, 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 jamming. Keep the world jamming, jamming. World jamming, 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 jamming. Keep the world jamming, jamming. I was on that cruise. It was sailing on. I was feeling fine. World jamming, 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 jamming. Keep the world jamming, jamming. Jamming, 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 jamming. People were jamming, jamming. While the crews were sailing, the musicians they were playing, the singers they were singing. It was a mixture of melody, it was a mixture of music, it was a mixture of song. World jamming, 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 jamming. People were jamming, jamming. Everyone, yes, they were dancing. Everyone, yes, they were shouting. Yes, they cruise once a year. Number one, cabin world jamming. Number two, cabin world jamming. Number three, cabin world jamming. World jamming, 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 jamming. People world jamming, jam. The vibe, it was together. It was one nice time together. People were talking and laughing together. World jamming, 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 jamming. People world jamming, jamming. Number four, cabin world jamming. Number five, cabin world jamming. Number six, cabin world jamming. World jamming, 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 jamming. People world jamming, jamming. Up by the stern, everything could be hurried. Straight to the bow, everything could be hurried. Merchandise selling, people were buying. We're jamming, 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 jamming. People were jamming, jamming. Annabelle, she was jamming on the cruise. People jamming, there is nothing to lose. This cruise, it carried over. We're jamming, 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 jamming. People were jamming, jam crew. Number seven, cabin were jamming. Number eight, cabin were jamming. Number nine, cabin were jamming. Were jamming, 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 jamming. People were jamming, jam crew. While the crews were heading to the dock, everything just started to rock. Everyone they started to flash. World jamming, 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 jamming. People were jamming, jam. Number 10, cabin were jamming. Number 11, cabin were jamming. Number 12, cabin were jamming. World jamming, 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 jamming. People were jamming, jam.
How can you not be in the mood for the Caribbean Man, with something like that, Burning Spear, from the new album, Ja is Real, and that is The Cruise. About 25 minutes before the hour, hey, is this working? Yeah, it is. Okay, just checking. Anyway, let's see. More serious stuff. You know, of course, by now that Hosni Mubarak has said that he will step down, what, in September? Yeah. Just won't leave now. stubborn old dictators, stubborn old bastards. They just don't want to go. And if they do have to go, they want to go with one last little bit of dictatorial flair, I suppose. And so it is that instead of leaving now, Mubarak says he'll go in September. That he will leave in a constitutional way. Well, that'll be something new, because he damn sure hasn't ruled in a constitutional way. Filthy old dictators. So, but, you know, I guess that goes into the win column. Now, some other things. We've got another one to add to the list of potential right-wingers out there trying to deal death and devastation, and I didn't want this thing to get lost in the shuffle along the way. Roger Stockham, 63 years old. He's behind bars in Michigan now. He had really planned on not being behind bars. This is the way it is with those hateful old teabaggers. They've got their hateful plans, but they can't resist getting, because they have, they're cowards at heart, and they have to drink their courage first. Roger Stockham left California and drove all the way to Michigan with a carload of high-powered illegal fireworks. He was drinking in a Detroit bar Monday last and started talking about, you know, what he was going to do to that mosque in Dearborn. Yeah, I know, they probably don't talk like that in California, but, you know, it's bagger speak, it's teabagger speak. Bless his heart, an employee of the bar followed Roger Stockham outside and wrote down his license plate number and called Detroit police. They, in turn, contacted authorities in Dearborn. The Dearborn authorities then presciently, or at least intelligently, began cruising by anything related to Islam in the city. Mosques and the like. And there he was. They found Roger Stockham sitting inside his vehicle outside the Islamic Center of America with a boatload of M-80s in his trunk and other explosives. Waiting. Inside the mosque, more than 500 members had gathered for a funeral service. He was arrested. He's been charged with one count of a threat of terrorism and one count of explosives possession. And by the way, before the for-profit media can get out there and start working the false equivalence express, Roger Stockham has a long history of being a violent extremist. It apparently has something to do with his service in Vietnam. He served time in federal prison for threatening to kill a dim leader and bomb a Vermont veterans clinic in 2002. Now, he was going to kill Dim Leader, he said. But this tells you a little bit. When he was threatening to blow up the Vermont Veterans Clinic in 2002, he called a local newspaper twice, saying that he was going to set bombs off in the neighborhood. He identified himself as Hem Ahadine and called himself a local Muslim terrorist on a roll, and said he was going to carry out a jihad against the VA office. before he took off on his cross-country drive to go and blow up the mosques in Michigan, he posted a rambling, what's been called a rambling statement on Facebook, and he again referred to himself as Hem Ahadin, and said it was his Muslim name. You know how the right wing will respond to this. Obviously, he was unhinged, and he had become, he had converted to Islam, and that's how they are. They bomb things, them Muslims. But of course, it's just another isolated incident, right? Sure it is. Another one to add to the list. I don't know if you caught Tom Tomorrow. I think it was a week or so ago. You know, the Penguin always talking to the sort of 1950s-looking right-winger. The shootings in Arizona were an isolated incident. There are no larger conclusions to be drawn. That's true that Loeffner's motivations remain unclear. But what about the guy arrested for threatening Senator Patty Murray's life? Isolated. The right-winger, that's the isolated. The guy arrested for threatening Murray's supporters with a cleaver, isolated. The guy arrested for threatening Representative Jim McDermott, isolated. The guy arrested for threatening Nancy Pelosi, isolated. The would-be Tides Foundation killer who openly cites Glenn Beck as an inspiration, isolated. Yeah, hold on a minute, I got a text. Wow, listen to this. Loeffner gave an interview and said that Obama is his biggest influence next to Saul Alinsky and Stalin, and that his murderous rampage was inspired by his support for mental health, for health care reform. Wingnut. Ha! I knew it! I knew he had to be a left-leaning America hater! Well, that changes everything, doesn't it? His actions have utterly discredited Obama, not to mention the entire Democrat Party, That's not what that text said at all, is it? No, sorry, it was Blinky. He's going to be late for dinner. If you think I'm going to acknowledge that anything just occurred, you're entirely mistaken. Trust me, the thought never crossed my mind. Isolated incidents. Just another isolated incident. So, too, I suppose, the isolated incident in Florida. You know the one. You know, it's tough raising teenagers. Teenagers are constantly pushing the envelope, testing the boundaries between your position as a parent and theirs as a not too far from being grown-up child. Yeah. They do that, and they do it deliberately. Some they do deliberately, some it's not deliberate. Some, I think, is sort of the hardwired in. Because the next generation has to test its boundaries. It has to find out what the structure is like. Bless her heart, Agnes just brought me a steaming hot cup of tea. And I think she would... not hesitate in the least when I say that having teenagers in one's house becomes an exercise in having one's buttons pushed and boundaries tested.
I'm taking the thumper defense.
If I can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all.
That's right.
But no, I mean, we've got three teenagers. And they do. They push buttons, and sometimes they get downright infuriating. But I've never had the urge to blow their brains out. That's what the military mom in Florida did a few days ago. She said she's not insane. She's evil and she's authoritarian and right-wing. She said she was just tired of their mouth! Tired of them mouthing off all the time! So she blew away her 13-year-old, her daughter, and then went home and blew away her 16-year-old son. Obviously, she had issues. Her husband, of course, a major in the military, was deployed in the far Middle East. I can't imagine what it would have been for him to have gotten that news. I imagine he will be doing some rather brutal soul searching. And the thing is, when people do that, they're generally unfair to themselves. But she was tired of their mouth. And of course, you can get access to firearms in Florida more easily than you can to mental health services. So she murdered her children. Can you imagine? But don't be too quick to say that she was crazy. Because she may not have been. She may have been overwhelmed by her world. She may have been overwhelmed by her situation. But the fact of the matter remains that in a culture where firearms are harder to get, when one is overwhelmed like that, doing that kind of manifest evil is significantly more difficult. But in Florida, getting a gun is on a difficulty scale akin to getting a gumball. They're everywhere. Florida even has laws that say if you're scared of somebody, you have the right to murder them in cold blood. Really. Just another day of the freedom of the Second Amendment, isn't it? Just another installment payment on the butcher's bill. Hold on a second here. I want to see if I can get something going. This might actually be worth hearing. Let me check this out. I'm told in the chat room that that President Obama is speaking on the topic of Egypt right now. And I'm going to see if I can find a live feed of it somewhere. Might bear hearing. Let's see if, I don't know, does C-SPAN have it? No, that's not what that is. Okay, guys in the chat room. Well, I hope I'm not boring you senseless. Obama's speaking now on Egypt, says Sparky. Where, Sparky? Where? Where are you watching it? Because I've got C-SPAN up here. And it's, not Obama. Alright, let's try this. Oh, he's finished now. Thanks, Sparky. Well, that takes care of that then. That must have been pretty quick. Ah, yeah, thanks. Thanks, Marty. Judging from Al Jazeera, he's finished his remarks. So, yeah, thanks, Benny. Yeah, good timing. Maybe I should play some music and just start all over again. In fact, that might not be a terribly bad idea. I mean, not start all over again per se, but we are near the end of the first hour. And somehow talking about mothers blowing away their children, it takes a lot of the starch out of just about all the other stories one might otherwise have. So what's the official term for this? Yeah, I think it's reset. Yeah, let's call this a reset. I think it would be a fine idea, as a matter of fact. And, you know, we've got the Green News Report coming up. It is, after all, Tuesday, and we get the Green News Report on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So why don't we do that? We'll take a little break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. You know how to reach the program, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. We'll be back after the Green News Report. Yeah, it is. It's Bohemian Rhapsody on a ukulele. Thank you.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, February 1st, 2011.
Snowmageddon, again, this time across the U.S. Natural disasters are expensive. Happy birthday to the car. ExxonMobil profits to die for, plus progressives expose the coctopus.
Sometimes in this society, the only way that you can get attention is to shine a public light.
All of that and more, shining a public light, straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And when it comes to science, don't reject it because the pulpit tells you to reject it. Reject it because it's unreasonable.
And when it comes to Glenn Beck, don't reject him because he's unreasonable. Reject him because he just makes things up. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, for the last 2 decades, scientists have been predicting that the warmer climate would mean that more moisture stayed in the air, which means we would have more violent and extreme weather events. It seems like we are seeing exactly that across the nation now with what could be an absolute record storm in this nation.
Yes, in the Midwest and the Northeast, another monster storm in this already record winter season. Satellite photos show this giant storm stretches from Texas to New England and could affect up to 100 million Americans. The mounting costs of snow removal and disposal is also dealing a crushing blow to already struggling city budgets. Nearly 5,000 flights are already canceled, and roads and railways are closed.
But good news for climate change deniers out there and those who believe in smaller government. One of my favorite Twitterers, Pour Me Coffee, tweeted during last week's D.C. blizzard, "Efficiency tip for D.C. government. No need to plow Senator Rand Paul's street. He will do it himself." That is, of course, the type of thinking that these folks who want government to get the hell out of our business, get the hell out of the climate.
Until they actually need it during a natural disaster.
Exactly.
Down under, months of record rainstorms and historic flooding in Queensland and Northeast Australia are not over yet. Queensland residents are now evacuating ahead of tropical cyclone Yasi. And now the Prime Minister of Australia has proposed a temporary national flood tax to help shoulder the cost of the estimated $5 billion cleanup and repair. Leads to questions about whether governments are planning ahead for more of these extreme weather events that are predicted by climate scientists. And fueling these extreme weather events around the world are higher ocean temperatures. Now, a new study shows water flowing into the Arctic Ocean from the North Atlantic is the warmest it's been in at least 2,000 years. That's according to an international team of scientists studying layers of ocean sediment cores near Greenland. They say it's likely a factor in the dramatic loss of ice cover at the North Pole.
That science is unreasonable. Like Glenn Beck said, I'm going to reject it.
Happy birthday to the car. It's 125 years old this year. On January 29th, 1886, Carl Benz of Mercedes-Benz filed the first patent on the new horseless carriage, having no idea how revolutionary his patent was in leading to the automobile, vastly expanding personal transportation around the world and literally helping to change the face of the planet.
And in 125 years, we've added exactly 5 miles to the gallon and 4 cup holders in every car.
ExxonMobil should raise a toast to the car. ExxonMobil, the largest American oil company, reported a 53% increase in its fourth quarter profits on Monday.
Speaking of gas efficiency,
53% increase in profits. This was before the unrest in Egypt rattled world markets. Analysts say the returns are helped by an improving world economy that has increased energy demand and crude oil prices.
And yet last week during the State of the Union speech, when Barack Obama called for ending subsidies to companies like ExxonMobil, who have made record profits in the history of civilization, the Republicans in Congress, their heads nearly fell off. No, we have to keep giving free government money to these guys.
25 protesters were arrested among hundreds of activists who converged on Rancho Mirage near Palm Springs, California this past Sunday to rally against the influence of the billionaire Koch brothers, David and Charles Koch, two of the nation's leading financial backers of conservative causes, and who also happen to be the biggest funders of the climate change denial industry. Their businesses are some of the primary sources of pollution in the United States. Twice a year, the billionaire Koch brothers host a private, secretive strategy meeting with conservative politicians, pundits, corporate leaders, and even Supreme Court justices to advance their corporatist agenda.
Not so secret anymore.
This is a civil public demonstration of concern about the corrosive influence of money.
That was former Representative Bob Edgar, now president of Common Cause. At the rally, Van Jones, the green jobs advocate and former White House advisor, discussed two threats to democracy, excessive political power and excessive corporate power, and concluded that
excessive concentrations of economic power in our country pose as big a threat and, frankly, a greater threat than any concentration of political power.
For more on that and the stories we did not get to today, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please hit that PayPal button to help support us staying on your public airwaves to tell you the reasonable truth. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your rather reasonable Green News Report.
Hey guys, I know I don't say this enough, but I'm going to say it now. When push comes to shove, you guys are always there for me. And you really hung in there. And look, you've always been so close to me. So don't take this the wrong way, but I got you something. I love you guys.
Aw, we love you too.
I love you guys. Powder for your nads by Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
You know, I realized I was a little bit downbeat there, and I apologize, but I'll be honest with you, it's real stinky in here from the fire earlier, and it makes you feel a little bit goofy, you know, dopey, stupid, and not in a good way, but we'll get through the next couple of hours. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-443-2366. The numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. It's not a pleasant, but it's kind of headachey. Blech. But following up just a little bit on the Florida gun story, these two sort of, they kind of dovetail in a sort of sick and sorry way, if you know what I mean. Because there is a relationship between the ease with which guns are obtained in this country and the steady stream of death and destruction that follows, especially in the wake of the handgun violence that follows in the stream and the wake of the ease with which these things are acquired. Check this out. Now, I'm no fan of Michael Bloomberg, but I thought what he and a group of other mayors did in sending purchasers to an Arizona gun show was smart, and was it showed up the gun culture for what it is. Check it out.
There are
plenty of private sellers who continue to flout the law by engaging in regular business, and who also sell guns to people who have no business buying them. After the tragic massacre in Tucson, we decided to investigate the issue in Arizona and sent an undercover team to the Crossroads of the West gun show in Phoenix on January 23rd. And today we're going to show you some video footage of
a few minutes at that
gun show. The first video illustrates just how easy it is for anyone with a driver's license to walk into a gun show and buy the weapons used in the Tucson shooting. No questions asked. Let's take a look.
Or a listen.
This is how easy it is to buy a Glock 9mm gun with no background check. This gun is similar to the Glock 9mm gun used in the Tucson shootings 15 days before.
Is this a 9?
Which one?
A Glock?
Yeah, 19 is a 9.
Huh?
No, this is a, yeah, 19 is a 9. This is a 40.
40?
A 2?
And how much is the one without the license?
$480.
You guys licensed dealers? Or?
No tax. No. Just private. There's a bunch of private people. We have like 5 people here with different stuff.
And so you guys are private and now?
Yeah. Just need a bill of sale, see your ID, make sure you're not from California, obviously.
Okay.
Cool.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks very much.
Now, the sale you just saw may be legal, assuming the seller, in fact, only sells occasionally. But it really shouldn't be legal. Just think about this for a second. No matter what you've done in the past, if you have a criminal record, a history of drug abuse, or even if your name appears on a terrorist watch list, you can still walk into a gun show and buy a 9mm in the time it would take to buy a hamburger and fries at McDonald's. Because of the lack of background checks, gun shows have really become magnets for criminals. And in our second video, you'll see why. You would hope that with the memory of the Tucson shooting still so painfully fresh, anyone working at a gun show, especially in the state of Arizona, would think twice before selling a firearm to anyone who even hinted or joked about not being able to pass a background check. But that was not the case at the Crossroads of the West gun show in Phoenix. Just 15 days after the Tucson shootings, our undercover investigator found sellers willing to break the law and endanger their fellow citizens just to make a quick buck. Let's take a look at this one.
Silence, silence, silence. Dead air, dead air. These are citations to the U.S. Code, pointing out the essential problem. Hidden camera video showing a private seller selling a gun to a man who says he probably couldn't pass a background check.
I'm looking for something like this, you know, 9mm with stopping power and, you know, something that's concealable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Next to this one, that's probably the newest one I got. This one has never been shot.
That's brand new?
Yeah.
So it's all tied up.
You don't like it, you can just tell later and sign in your name. Like, when you buy a new one, you have to worry about where it's going to end up.
Yeah, I like the feel of this, man.
That one's real good.
That's a good one. I like
it. Palm frame, real life.
Yeah, I like that part. I like the concealability. The best part, though. Are you set on this price, man?
It's like $25. Out the door, no tax, no nothing.
No tax?
I'm not a dealer,
so
you have to worry about
taxes or anything. Oh, that's good. So you're not one of those, you know, dealer guys, right?
No tax, no form. You have to do transfers and nothing.
Yeah.
Arizona ID, that's it.
Yeah, so no background check?
No.
That's good, because I probably couldn't pass it, you know what I mean? Yeah, I like this, man. You take 5 for it? Cash. Right now.
How
You have your ID with you? You can see your ID.
You need my ID? I thought you're going to do background.
You can see it now.
Oh, you need to see it?
Yeah, can you show you mine? We're private telling you to show you mine, the beard, and that's it.
Oh, okay. That's all right. Okay, do it.
Yeah, I don't have to go far. This is a true Arizona resident. Is all I need.
All right. How's that? That's me. That's Arizona,
all
right?
All I need.
And the sale goes down.
I think I can get, like, Big Cliff, man.
Pull out to the tent straight out here.
Yeah.
There's a guy right there, Magnum Clips.
Yeah, I saw
that's
that.
The guy I buy all my clips from, and he has everything for them.
Are they expensive, you think?
No, you get aftermarket ones, you get it for cheap, like $25.
Are you going to be here, like, next time, or in case I got problems?
But otherwise, just send it to Steve.
Now, that sale was blatantly illegal, but it happens all the time. And once a dangerous person buys a gun, buying a large ammunition clip is even easier. And now we're going to watch our undercover investigator purchasing an extended magazine at the same show.
You know, like what got used in Tucson.
For Glock, Mike? An extended one? For nine?
No
Packer, but you got extended?
Factories, 39
and that's how many rounds? How many rounds?
33.
You get three? Yeah.
Okay.
Take 120.
He haggles to make himself look legit. $129. Take 120?
120. Thanks, sir.
And that's really all you need to know. That's Gun Show America. You might recall the, it was the guy who shot up the metro station at the Pentagon. His firearm was bought at a gun show similar to that, only it was in Vegas, I believe. And it had been sold into the stream of commerce by the Memphis Police Department, having been confiscated in the course of some sort of criminal bust. And instead of destroying the firearm, as the law used to provide for, because the organizations like the Memphis Police Department are strapped for cash, because remember, the taxes that support police are bad now in Repiglican land, they have to sell the guns and put them back out on the street, where they'll probably wind up doing, you know, deadly harm to some other innocent. That video and the audio that you heard makes abundantly clear what the problem is in this country. The law, you know, if you ask the NRA, the NRA always says, well, you know, the problem we have here in America is that we don't enforce the laws that are on the books. Maybe they're right. But by God, if we tried to enforce any laws surrounding those dodgy transactions, the NRA would have a purple polka-dotted blue screaming kittens with crocheted tails hissy fit. Because the NRA likes it when people die. It's good for business. And the question is, how do you deal with it? Well, Mayor Bloomberg and his colleagues have an idea. You know, they're not trying to take anybody's guns away. They're just trying to make sure that they can't be bought in Arizona and then taken illegally elsewhere. Which is precisely what happens. I mean, we have experience with this in Appalachia because people come down from the gang-infested cities and so forth and buy guns here and take them back north. And when you think about it, $450 or $500 for something like a Glock, that ain't much money. There are problems within problems within problems. That attach to this, and absolutely next to zero chance of doing anything about them. Because of the blood-sodden National Republican Rifle Association. And the manufacturers. And Gun Owners of America and Lurie Pratt. No, Benny. No. It's not, nobody's crocheting the kitten's tails. They have crocheted tails. Nobody's crocheted. That's the never mind, if you have to explain the joke. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, first, I'm just appalled by what happened to those children. And... words can't even describe.
No, they can't.
The feeling of revulsion that I have in horror.
Pity the father. I mean, beyond the victims, you're half a world away, deployed to the Middle East by the U.S. military, commissioned officer, and I guess to a certain extent, in a theater of war, you expect to be told that one of your soldiers has been killed, or several, as is the case. But my God, to have the chaplain come around and say, your wife back in Florida blew your teenage children away? Dear God, what? I can't conceive of it.
Nor can I. And you know, these people at these gun shows talk about the feel of it and the looks of it and its capabilities and things of that nature.
It has a pornographic quality to it.
Well, just let one of them be on the receiving end of one of those weapons and see how much they'll enthuse about that then.
Indeed.
Or to see what one can do to a person. It's just absolutely horrible.
But, Jim, there's a mindset that goes on in the gun that obtains among the gun fanatics where they will always defend gun infusion into the culture at all costs. 9-year-old little girl, 13-year-old little girl, 16-year-old boy, doesn't matter.
Obviously not. You know, I've been trained with all types of weapons and things like that, and I have tremendous respect for them. And I have a tremendous yearning to see those rules governing their use being very, very strictly enforced. But with these people, they have no sense of proportion. That's a rather poor way of expressing it, but it is a lack of proportion, a lack of just humane sensibility.
Well, I think you expressed that rather well. And to extend and expand upon it, it's this willingness, like the Tom Tomorrow cartoon pointed out, this willingness, wow, it was an isolated incident. Oh, it was an isolated incident. Yeah, that one was isolated too. If everything's an isolated incident, then we can never talk about the collective effect, now can we?
No, it's really a force multiplier on other people who might want to do the same thing.
It's exactly that.
That's the way I see it, you know?
I think about all of these stories, I don't know if the website's still there, but there used to be one called Gun Guys, and they just collected these horrors day in and day out, because there's always one. There is always one of these somewhere in the United States. And yet we can't have a conversation about them, because the National Rifle Association is right there, Johnny on the spot, ready to inform anybody who wants to talk about handgun violence that it's not the gun's fault.
Not the gun's fault?
Yeah. You've heard the phrase, I'm sure. Guns don't kill people. Kill people.
Well, of course not. I mean, the gun sits in the rack or the gun's on the table, whatever, but it's not going to discharge itself. It's going to take some loon who, for whatever reason, discharges that weapon and does so without any sense of responsibility or humanity or any type of conscience. I the whole thing is just disproportionate.
So the question arises then, Jim, how do we have the conversation?
Bob, I don't know.
How do you cut through the NRA doublespeak to be able to have a conversation about 13-year-old little girls getting to be 14-year-old little girls? Because obviously the first thing that comes to mind is, well, that woman in Florida was insane.
Well,
because you just don't do that if you're all home.
Well, you know the definition of insanity, legal definition, to be able to not...
Yeah, the McNaughton test.
To ascertain right from wrong and this, that, and the other, and yet you find these people who go off the deep end, and or maybe they're...
It's pretty obvious that the woman knew what she was doing, because she, you know, in being asked why, she said, I just got tired of their mouth.
And so she killed one and then went and found the other and killed him.
Yep.
That's just totally beyond any sense of proportion
or reason
that I can conceive in any way, shape, or form. It is.
But what troubles me is the ease with which we say that somebody was nuts or that they were deranged.
It's just lack of responsibility on the part of the people who indulge in the traffic of these weapons and things of that nature. Somebody had to sell it to her. Somebody had to get it to her. And, you know, obviously, that gun should never have found that home. I mean, I just can't wrap my head around this. I just really can't.
I don't think rationally anyone can. But again, we come back to my question. How do we penetrate that veil of doublespeak and lobbying? Is it because when we don't, Jim, when we bow down to the NRA, we're basically telling the entire country that we're willing to accept this sort of thing periodically in the name of freedom. Freedom, Jim.
Well, I don't call it freedom. For lack of a better term, I'm going to call it the Dodge City mentality.
Well, that makes sense, too.
It really is. It's just like, what is this country becoming? The Wild Wild West?
Well, not becoming, is.
In which you ride into town and blow away anybody that looks at you cross-eyed or...
Oh, I'm really not kidding about the law in Florida. The NRA has pushed these all across the country, where if you are deemed to have had a reasonable fear of someone, that you've got a right to plug them and raise your reasonable fear as an affirmative defense to cold-blooded murder in a criminal prosecution.
To me, that makes no sense. Like I say, I can't get my head around it. Cannot do it, and I just don't understand it. And yet I've been trained with most every firearm you can imagine, and explosive device too.
Well, I imagine you were probably somewhere along the way to field strip one and put it back together blindfolded, weren't you?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And like you said one time before, if you can't do that, you shouldn't own one. I mean, there's respect for what these things can do. They have their place, obviously, in our world today, but not that kind of place. Not that kind of place.
I mean, what is it, and again, we're talking about the gun culture. What is a gun, we don't know, I don't know, I haven't seen the follow-up on the story. I don't know where she got the firearm. But what does a gun shop owner think when somebody walks in to buy a firearm? I've gone back time and time again to the gun shop owner who just a few months before sold that Glock 9mm to Jared Loughner.
Oh, the only thing he's thinking about is how much money he can make out of it and how much ammunition he can sell to place into the chamber.
But since the guy's running a gun store, there are a couple of stupid little boxes that have to be checked off, I think, you know, on the federal firearms form. It's not registration, but one of them is I am not a convicted felon, and another one is I've never been adjudged mentally ill, and I'm not mentally ill, and another one's I'm not addicted to drugs or alcohol. just tick, 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 and here's your gun, and go kill a 9-year-old and shoot a congresswoman.
Many people are going to check those boxes. No, they're not going to do that.
No.
No, they're not going to do that at all. All they want to do is go in there and get that weapon that's going to, I don't know, make them feel more powerful or to compensate for some lack of ability within their own subconscious or superego or ego or it or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, you took me really off my feet when you told me that story.
She is described in the newspaper reporting, Jim, as depressed. Julie Schenecker of Tampa, Florida, planned these killings as she purchased the gun and then shot her 13-year-old son. I'm sorry, it was 13-year-old son, as she was bringing him to soccer practice. She then returned home to her upscale neighborhood and shot her 16-year-old daughter as she sat at the computer. This depressed woman then spent the night at home covered in her children's blood. Police found Schenecker and her two dead children after Schenecker's mother called from Texas, worried about her daughter, who was not answering the phone. The mother had gotten an email from her daughter, Julie Schenecker, saying she was depressed.
Well, God's truth, I've been depressed many times. And I've never even remotely considered anything like that. I mean, this country has its emphasis on the wrong syllable. I mean, I wish they would chase these people down who are selling these weapons like this and enforce these gun laws the way they're trying to chase people around with a bag of pot or something like that, you know? It's just crazy.
It does rather starkly point out the ridiculousness of things like, you know, running around busting people for cannabis.
Well, I mean, even look at legal drugs now. Let me just go one further here. I heard Andy talk last night about being diabetic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the drugs they have out to combat diabetes, like Avandia and Actos and things of that nature,
mm-hmm.
now they are being recalled. Not recalled, but they're class action lawsuits. And to my knowledge, the FDA has not withdrawn either medication. And remember our conversation a month ago about Accutane?
Yep.
FDA has not withdrawn that. It has not been withdrawn from the market by the FDA. I called my pharmacist and we had a talk about that. And she said, Jim, you wouldn't believe it. She said they haven't even taken Accutane off by the FDA. I mean, what are these people doing? I mean, you have these dangerous medications that cause congestive heart failure and things of that nature, and no action is taken. And then you have these firearms being sold, no action being taken. That's just an isolated incident. That's just absolutely slap-damn nuts.
And by the way, Jim, I'm dropping you an email right now. I'm sending you a link to the story about the mother. And when you open it, wait till you see the look on this woman's face. I've also posted it in the chat room. It's breathtaking.
I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know where. It's just absolutely a whirl of just lunacy. Absolute. Lack of proportion. I just don't. I simply cannot understand that. Knowing fully well, you know what these guns can do. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they're presented in some type of light where they're glamorous and they're beautiful pieces of workmanship and things like that. And they are beautiful pieces of workmanship. Yes, they are, and they're deadly efficient. But you really need to be on the receiving end of one, or to see someone who has been on the receiving end of one, to quite understand exactly what they are about. They are a machine for throwing bullets, and these bullets impact with horrendous effect?
Oh, a nine millimeter comes out with an initial muzzle velocity in excess of 1,000 feet per second. In this particular case, it was a 38 caliber handgun. The arrest affidavit, Jim, says Schenecker shot her son twice in the head for talking back as she drove him to soccer practice Thursday night. She drove home, went inside, and shot her daughter in the back of the head while the teen sat at a computer doing homework, and then shot her in the face.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And you will be horrified when you open that link.
Tell you the truth.
But here's the stuff that begins to make you shiver a little bit. The Florida Department of Children and Families said it investigated a complaint involving the family about 2 months ago, but the tip was determined to be unfounded and the case was closed. Now here's the mother in Texas who calls saying that the children's mother had described herself to her as depressed.
Well,
it looks like there's flags going up all over creation.
I don't think you can call that exactly postpartum depression, can you?
No. No, I think it's...
Not like a Susan Smith type thing, you know?
No, I think if you... the way it's explained is that the husband is, not a major, but a lieutenant colonel. He was with Central Command, which is, of course, near Tampa, but he had been shipped to the Middle East for some sort of... Not long-term deployment.
My heart goes out to that man. You have no idea of how my heart goes out to that man.
His life is as over.
I mean, Bob, how can you recover from something like that?
You can't.
Not really, no.
Her 16-year-old daughter told authorities in November that she had been hit by her mother on two occasions, and troopers investigating a car crash that same month thought the woman's glassy eyes and mush mouth indicated she had been using drugs.
I wonder what type of drugs she had been using. Probably ones that were prescribed by some psychiatrist who wanted to get her out of his office.
Yeah, a pill roller.
Yeah, so he could get somebody else in there and get them on something like that, you know? I mean, we could get into a discussion of modern psychiatry, which is 99% medication and 1%, well, I don't know what the other 1% is, I guess. Hope it works, honey.
Yeah.
Who knows, it might send you right off the deep end and make you just do things you didn't even think you were capable of doing. I don't know.
Again, we're not talking, we're talking about, and then the quotes, Jim, say things like, I just can't imagine this happening. They were such a lovely family. Neither had a criminal record. Parker Schenecker, the husband, served in the military in Munich from 1986 to 1990. His wife worked there from 1987 to 1992 as a Russian linguist involved in military intelligence.
In MI?
Yes.
This woman worked in MI over in Germany?
Yes, sir.
God's truth. I mean, I've dealt with people like that. And I know what they have to go through to be able to get into positions to work with MI. Of course, you know, I've always sometimes thought that MI is an oxymoron. You follow me?
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, God Almighty. Jesus, Lord have mercy.
The wreck she was in, the wreck the mother was in November, she was going 70 in a 55-mile-an-hour zone, plowed into a trailer hauling landscaping equipment. The report said she showed signs of drug impairment.
That's one of the most horrible things I've ever heard of in my life, particularly the way in which you've described it and the way that she did this.
Well, you know, Jim, Cassie, who's off at Princeton. You've heard her before.
Oh, yeah.
She just wrote in and said, the Child Protective Services complaint was unfounded because they live in an upscale neighborhood. I guarantee it. And she adds, when I was little, I often said the wrong thing, and I'm sure I was mouthy. I still can't shut up. My mom hit me, pushed me, grabbed my arms. Thank God she never had a gun. She said, my mom has a mental illness, diagnosed and everything. Maybe the mom in Florida was, too. Does Florida allow the mentally ill to access mental health care? Does it encourage it? If she was depressed and tired of her kids' mouthiness, why didn't she take a break and go out for an hour? Her kids weren't babies. Did she ever tell the military family services that she was depressed and needed help? Did she ever do anything?
Yeah, that was my next thought. I mean, family services in the military, I can remember when that was a real big program. I don't know how much it is now.
But isn't there also a culture that says that admitting to that kind of thing is a sign of weakness? Isn't that dangerous to a an officer's career if he wants to stop being a lieutenant colonel and be, for instance, a full bird colonel? Or wants to go from the bird to the star?
You mean for him to have family problems? Or
yeah.
Well, I can't speak with any authority on that because I've seen a lot of people promoted who have family problems and things of that nature. And it just depends on who catches it and what career track he's on and what his job is and how badly they need a person in that particular position and whether or not a slot is available and open.
Because there's a larger issue here beyond this singular horrifying story. There's an epidemic of suicide and domestic violence that is all over the military. Fort Lewis in Washington has had just a nightmare with it. And there's another fort, I forget what the base is in Colorado, that has, it's been like an it's been like a virus.
Well, you know, the only thing I can respond to you with is that in military families and things of that nature, any indication of loss of symmetry or symmetrical behavior can impact negatively upon a career track promotion. The reason for that being, if this man cannot deal with his own family, how can he deal with larger echelons as far as the command structure is concerned? That's the only way I can answer your question, and I don't know if it's a very good answer or not.
I don't know if there are any very good answers out of all this, Jim.
Loss of symmetry, loss of symmetrical behavior. Yes, that can be a negative factor. It's not going to help you to have that put in your 201 file, that's for sure. But anyway, I just wanted to bring up my feelings of revulsion toward that, and also to mention, in sympathy with Andy, diabetes and things of that nature, and what the FDA is not doing to protect people who are victims of this disease, and doesn't leave me with a very good feeling about a whole lot of things tonight. That's for sure.
I understand, Jim, and you know the diabetes epidemic again is, in many ways, a preventable one. But
yeah,
you,
it is.
But you wouldn't want to step on big agribusiness's toes and start talking about high fructose corn syrup that's burning up people's insides.
Well, they've got these, you know, these fast food places and all this kinds of stuff, and all they're doing is just pumping this stuff out to people as quickly as they possibly can. And the lack of responsibility of the schools not encouraging education and physical education and things of that nature, and the increase of obesity, it's just a whole spectrum of things that we can't get into tonight, but it's just total lack of any sense of proportion, and I keep using that word because it's the only one that comes to mind.
It's the only one that even begins to come near making sense.
Yeah, it is. It certainly is. And going back to your first comment about Ronald Reagan, oh, Lord have mercy.
I take it you're not going to be ordering ordering your bobblehead doll?
You mean the Reagan indulgences?
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is. It's. I mean, you know, back in the 15th century, John Tesla used to go around Germany promoting papal indulgences that would get you out of purgatory. Well, at least they used that money to build St. Peter's Basilica, which is a marvelous structure. But, I mean, for them to go around selling things of Ronald Reagan.
Well, what's interesting is they're selling these indulgences not so much for the purpose of the expiation of the sins of the donors, but what would be more clear, what more, would be more closely or accurately described as expiation of the sins of Michael Steele, because he put the RNC in a $23 million hole, and they're trying to make it up $25 at a time with bobblehead dolls and bags of jelly beans. Now, here's where the real trip into the funhouse starts, Jim, and I didn't mention it, but it bears mentioning since you brought it up.
Please.
There are, you know, whether it's the Koch brothers or any number of these right-wing think tanks, they have, between them, they have enough money to burn every elephant in Africa to the ground with sopping wet with stacks of $1,000 bills. That's the kind of walking around money they've got. So what they'll do is they'll buy the jelly beans and the bobbleheads, and here in another month or so, you'll start seeing premium ads for on right-wing websites for contribute $10 to, you know, fill in the blank here, and we'll gladly send you your very own God-fearing, patriotic, upstanding American Ronald Reagan bobblehead doll. Mark my words. It's all carnival midway stuff.
Oh, Bob, it doesn't even approach. I mean, carnival midway stuff is 10 meters above this shit. Excuse me.
Well, yeah, okay, this is pretty nasty and low.
I thought to myself when you brought that up, I couldn't help but send you that email and just say, you know, is this? You know, this, they've taken a page out of, what, Pat Robertson's book? And,
yeah, this is the sweaty prayer hanky, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what, you know, maybe if you send them maybe $50,000, they'll go in and they'll send you a piece of the true coffin of Ronald Reagan, or maybe they'll get some hair from India and tell the people that it belonged to Ronald Reagan, it was cut. But don't check it for dye or anything like that. That would be total anathema.
It would be anathema, and it would be heretical as well.
Yes, exactly. I mean, Ronald
Burn
Reagan,
the heretic!
Bobblehead dolls. Where the fuck is this country going? Man, the fuck are we going? I mean, you know, I listen to your program some nights, and I just think to myself, I just want to cut it off.
Well, wherever we're going, Jim, we're going on a gravel road. And that's, you know, that's another one of those that just grabbed me. I mentioned this last night on the program, and then our good friend Patty out in North Dakota fired off the local story about it. As an alternative to costly road repair, Richland County engineer Tom Schulte has suggested to the Board of County Commissioners Monday morning a new process called de-paving. There's a kind of a push to deal with these crumbling asphalt roads that don't have a whole lot of traffic that we can't afford to maintain. What do we do with them? So they're going to grind them up and turn them back into gravel roads because, after all, in North Dakota, you know, the roads aren't that often. They're not used that often. So why not turn them into gravel?
Oh, and why not turn the interstate into gravel and our bridges and stuff like that? Remember our conversation months ago about the infrastructure?
The crumbling infrastructure, absolutely.
And what did Obama bring up within 10 minutes of his ascending the podium during his State of the Union speech?
The self same.
And said that it was a D, like I told you on the program. I mean, I'm not one of these I told you so people. I hate I told you so people, but I mean, I did mention that, and I did go with you.
Well, what else is there to say?
The entire report card. Remember the report card we talked about?
Roads, bridges, airports, nuclear facilities, yeah.
stand, and yet the whole thing is just entirely disproportionate. Entirely disproportionate. A third world country in this is what we're becoming. And, you know,
Haiti with cable and gravel roads.
You got it. Well, anyway, I've taken up enough of your time, and I'm not real happy to hear what I heard tonight, but I guess it just reaffirms my belief that, you know, everything is just going flat, doggone nuts. And
where are we going, and why am I in this handbasket?
I mean, you know, I might call your program and have a Santa that laughs and farts, but damn if I do anything crazy like that.
Yeah, I understand, Jim. I understand.
You know, I've had people criticize me and stuff like that, and, you know, I want to...
No, the laughing, farting Santa didn't draw any criticism. Believe me, that laid me low.
Yeah, well, I try to. I mean, I try to inject... I mean, I have a bizarre sense of humor, and, you know, that's just me. And if it weren't me, well, my conversation really wouldn't count for a whole lot. And I realize I say things that might people might disagree with on this program. But
this ain't Sunday school. We don't all have to agree about the received wisdom. That's how we find solutions. That's how we come up with answers.
Everything, and I've told you so. And you know, I don't. You know, sit back and talk with you. I mean, conversations with you and me are not like a contrapuntal pew, subject and answer. But, I mean, I just try to, I give the best that I've got.
And you do well, Jim. Thank you very much. And have the best evening that you possibly can.
By the way, is that your hot water heater that blew?
Yeah.
Well, thank God it didn't blow while you were gone.
No, no kidding. You know, this will teach me to criticize my electric bill. I was running my mouth off about the electric bill last night, and then boom, I get up this morning and the house is nearly catching fire.
Did it flood?
No, it did not. No, it did not. But the stench from that, from the burnt wiring and so forth. I mean, I'm sitting here and I got a little contact buzz. That's why I was a little bit downbeat. It just kind of, woo, you know, a little, feel a little goofy.
Buddy, listen, try this. Try swinging out of bed one morning. And you've got an inch of water on the floor.
You know, I've actually done that. It was early in our marriage.
That just sucks.
Agnes and I had both caught the great flu of 1993. And neither of us could take a step without, you know, squealing. We hurt so bad. And the day before, she had gone down and made the coffee. So the next morning was my turn to go downstairs and make the coffee. And I walked downstairs, and I waded through 3 inches of water to the coffee pot. In the midst of a horrible snowstorm in March, the roof had given away on this old farmhouse where we were living at the time. And, yeah, there was 3 inches of water on the floor.
Been there. No fun.
Oh, yeah, and squeegee and all that out the door with the flu? Partay.
It separates the men from the boys, that's for sure. But listen, leave those fish alone. Just admire them when they jump.
Well, that's all I am going to do. Oh, I lost you. Sorry about that, Jim. Yeah, because somebody else misunderstood that. If I do the Hemingway old man in the sea thing, it is all catch and release. We won't be bringing home the marlin to put it on the wall. We'll take pictures. But, yeah, all those things are catch and release. And I believe in catch and release. Quick email before I go on to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. This in from Kate. Subject line, lest we make any more judgments. I don't think I made any judgments. I don't think Jim did either. But Kate says, even though it was horrible, the kids are dead, the family ripped apart, I can understand how and why this happened. The mother was single parenting while her husband is deployed. How many times has he been deployed? How troubled were the children? How stable was the mother? Is she on meds that caused the violent reaction? Clearly, she was very ill. I've had some similar domestic experiences, depression, single parenting during deployment. I couldn't go to military authorities because of his career track. Please don't be so quick to judge. I wasn't judging her. This discussion is akin to men discussing how horrible abortion is. Yes, the story is horrible. Yes, there were red flags. No, there is no social services for the military wives.
In November, she was suspected by police of being in some sort of drug state. The daughter was mouthy to her, and the mother, it was reported, had slapped her repeatedly in the face during a car ride and tried to continue slapping her when she pulled into the garage. That's when the CPS call was made and was determined to be unfounded. And there was no help, and there was no outreach, because I suspect Cassie is right. They were too respectable for CPS. I've seen that happen. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Well, you know, the private sphere is off limits if you have a certain income in this country. I mean, that's kind of the grand bargain with capitalism. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I saw this picture because I had to go look. Hello. Good Lord. It's a horrific story, but, you know, there's red flags all over this country, and like you started out talking about how isolated incidents, it goes back to, oh, we're all individuals, all connected to Ayn Randy and bullshit, everyone's an island. I mean, it just speaks to that whole thing. So you have these horrific incidents time and time again. No one makes the connection because we're all individuals, don't you know? I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, and we're all pulling ourselves up by our free market bootstraps.
And God damn it, don't ever go into the private because your family must be all right because you can't deal with this neoliberal shit when you step out the door. I mean, that's a really awful... God, I feel so hideously bad for that husband. Wow, I don't know how you recover from that.
I honestly don't, Sandra. I mean, there's no amount of counseling.
Well, it's the woman. I mean, she was, you know, she was depressed. I mean, I understand, but you know what? I've been depressed. Shit, my mother raised me by herself. She was hella depressed. I'm not like, you know, I don't mean to get, you know, it's just horrible. I just think, though, you know, how many times? That one chick who drowned her five kids.
Susan Smith.
She was depressed. The one girl who shot up her drowned... No, yeah, that was her, but then there was the woman in Texas who did five kids.
Oh, yeah. You know. Well, there were two women in Texas who did their kids. One of them killed her kids with a rock, and the other bashed them in the heads, and the other one drowned them in a bathtub.
And what are they... And they all seem to be kind of similar, you know what I mean?
Well, did you notice where Mama called her daughter from?
Yeah, I know.
Texas.
Right. And it's just sort of... You know, I mean, I can imagine... You know, how these women, are sort of have to struggle and maintain an image and on and on. I can imagine, you know, how discombobulated it all is when it's, you know what I mean? But there's really no excuse. It's really quite frightening. It's like mouthy. Hello?
Yeah, mouthy.
I mean, the back of a hand, you know, that's something that occurs, but just shooting somebody? Shooting your kids? I don't know.
And the thing is, when they get around to trying her, there will be evidence of premeditation because of the fact that, you know, this wasn't hubby's service pistol. This was a pistol that she went out to the gun store and laid down money for and carried it out the door the same day that she laid down the money.
No, but the thing is, though, and I hate to say it because, like I said, it is a horrible story, but it's amazing when you read these articles and you see the people, all of a sudden you hear all this about depression, this excuse, that excuse, blah, 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 and it's just like, yeah, different class, different color, you wouldn't hear none of that, and I will not take that back.
I've been dancing around that, but you know, Cassie brought it up.
No.
And she's right. She said, the CPS complaint was unfounded because they live in an upscale neighborhood. I guarantee it.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's just kind of, I mean, nevertheless, it's stunning. And she just strolled up and got whatever kind of gun she wanted and just lit up her children, and that's all that, you know. But it's isolated, though. It's an isolated incident.
Isolated incident. Guns had nothing to do with it. The availability of guns had nothing to do with it. She would have done it with a steak knife if she had to.
Yeah.
The only thing being that, you know, the story is there now that when she went slapping her daughter around the face, that the girl was able to grab her hands and keep her from slapping her anymore.
No, but
you can't grab the bullet.
Look at this woman, though. I mean, good Lord. I don't know. I was kind of taken aback when I found the story.
Oh, did you find the picture of her walking out of the jail being escorted by the two homicide guys?
Yeah, no, I see it all, and it's just, I mean... Anyway, it's not really too much more to say about it beyond the availability of the sort of firearms. I mean, there's no end to this. Like you said, there's incidents like this every day in this country. I don't know. Anyway.
And we can't, and if nothing else, Sandra, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything. He said horn. Ha ha. But if nowhere else, I will try to foster this discussion. Because these aren't isolated incidents, and they all do have the commonality of easily acquired firearms.
Well, no, but see, I'm still stuck on the email. Why is this akin to two men talking about abortion, though? I mean, I thought that was a bit of a low blow.
Well, because I, you know, here's me and Jim talking about, you know, this woman who killed her kids, and we have no operational. The functional understanding of what it is to be a woman in that sort of circumstance.
Well, no, I don't give a F. There's two dead children, you know. If you're that far gone, get out. Go see your mother in Texas. Get some damn help. No, I can't hear it. I don't care.
Well, one of the interesting things out of the story, I suspect you had the same one I did from the Herald Trib, if you had the picture. You know, it goes through the usual, business of, let's see, where is it? Let's see, McElroy, the police spokeswoman, said Scheneker left a note detailing her plans to kill her children and then herself, saying they talked back and were mouthy and that she was going to take care of it.
Yeah, but she didn't kill herself, though, did she?
No, she didn't. But she was hospitalized. Apparently,
you know.
they don't say it, Sandra. But you get the idea, because she was hospitalized, she was moved over into intensive care. Apparently, she ate a handful of pills. She didn't, you know, she wasn't going to use the gun on herself.
Oh, okay, so she did attempt to off herself.
That's the conclusion one draws.
But I mean, I understand. You know, I suppose as a human being, you know, we're supposed to gin up some sort of compassion and whatnot. But you know, I'm not going to back off. Trying to sort of, you see this person as a bit of a monster, you know, step away.
Yeah.
Don't buy the gun. You know, there's all sorts of possibilities here.
I mean, I freely admit, I have bought firearms. And I've bought firearms in circumstances where there was an aura of personal danger to me.
Okay, well, no. So you bought it because you wanted to protect yourself, or...
Yeah, because there was a chance that some idiot was going to come through the door, and I had been told it was going to happen.
Okay, so it wasn't like you were shopping when you're hungry, though.
No.
Okay.
No. Jesus, what the... God, Sandra. I mean, I understand, but, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe this is one of those Rick Goodner moments or something. What do you... You know, what happens in the human mind when you go from, my kids are so mouthy that I think I'm going to blow their brains out?
Listen.
I don't understand that existential space between the two statements.
No, because the most I understand is my mother would go and get a damn switch. That was it. You understand what I'm saying? We're talking about the early 70s, late 60s. That's what went on. You know, they didn't hesitate to beat their ass, but it was below.
Oh, I remember Richard Pryor talking about being sent to get the switch himself.
Yeah, you have to get, and if you bring back a twig, my mother go out and get a branch. That's across the board. But, you know, it was all done, you know, that's just how people did it, but it wasn't no, you know, I never felt like I was in danger. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the neighbors... This is really interesting. Charanun Sujinda, 38, lives across the street. He said the Schenekers moved in about 2 years ago and fit right in. The couple's two children often played in the cul-de-sac with other neighborhood kids. and Julie Scheneker seemed to be at home a lot. They seemed like a nice family, Sujinda said. I never thought this would happen. How could you do that to your children? And then Sina Jain, who carpooled with the Scheneker children and her own daughter, Shima, 15, told the St. Petersburg Times that recently Parker Scheneker had picked up his wife's carpooling shift while she recovered from a serious car crash that happened about a month ago. Details of the accident weren't immediately available, but now we know it was the accident where Mrs. Scheneker was thought to have been wasted to the gills when she plowed into a trailer truck, doing 70 in a 55. How many flags have to go up, Sandra?
A whole bunch, I guess, if you're in a certain area. I mean, I just flash back to the 50s when, you know, how homes used to have huge picture windows that you can open up, you know, and a lot of that had to do with so everybody could see what the hell was going on.
I grew up with one of those picture windows.
You need to know what's happening in the neighborhood, you know.
Yeah.
We're way, way away from that.
Yeah, now we're building windowless homes with bars on the doors.
Right, but you know what I mean, though. I mean, it's not like I'm extolling the 50s. I'm just saying,
no.
The private sphere is a personal private hell now. You can't reach out. You're left your own devices.
Well, what does that mean? She seemed to be home a lot.
Well, I don't know, but I'm just sort of tripping that she was just waiting around covered in blood. I mean, it's just all so horrific. I mean, is she in jail or what?
She's being held without bond.
Yeah. Mm. And this is Florida, right?
Yeah, Tampa.
Because they execute people down there.
They're not real keen on executing white folk.
Well, we didn't want to go there. But anyway, that's a terrible story. Terrible, terrible story. But you know what? You mentioned something yesterday, and I forgot to touch on it because I was so through, because I had heard about it before. So, wait a minute. Okay, there's such rape, if it's not violent rape, but rape is violent. What the hell?
Right. In its essence, if it's done with feather dusters, it's still violent.
That's what I'm saying. I was just listening, and then I read the article. I'm thinking, hold on. If like you said, if someone put some sex on you, how did you describe it? I was dying because it's just kind of like, yeah. How do you describe nonviolent rape, Bob? I really need to know.
Well, I think it's impossible because it's not a challenge to the language, Sandra. It's a challenge to reality.
Well, no, I'm just saying the whole thing is just absurd, and it's really frightening that they think they can splice that particular event in some manner where, well, this person won't be able to terminate a pregnancy because it wasn't a violent rape? Like, what?
Well,
the rules and shit weren't used? I mean, what's up? What's violent? If you're given a pill and you wake up and someone has...
What's violent is if it's done to a Republican's daughter.
Oh, yeah, I remember that guy who said that, and the woman had to be a virgin and all this sort of stuff in order to qualify. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And all of, you know, and again, because, you know, lest I lead anyone astray, and I certainly don't want to, individual sexual assault statutes are maintained by the several states. I imagine there are federal statutes for what happens if it happens on federal land, but you know there are West Virginia sexual assault statutes. There's sexual assault 1, sexual assault 2, sexual assault 3, and then we go down through the laundry list of abuse. So it doesn't, you know, what the Congress is doing, what the Republican House is doing, doesn't impact on the state's ability to define rape per se, but it creates a separate definition of rape that is used only when one is considering whether or not federal funds may be used to terminate the pregnancy of a woman of insufficient economic means. And that's really sickening, because, as was noted, you know, the well-to-do will fly to some civilized country to get little Muffy's problem taken care of. It's the woman who lives in Pearl, Mississippi, who has to make it all the way to Jackson and the one clinic there.
Yeah, no, I mean, the whole thing is just, it's absolutely stunning. I mean, is there a chance that this may happen? I mean, I was so angry, I couldn't get through to the part where is it just a thought, or what's happening?
It's got 173 co-sponsors. And the irony was not lost on me, Sandra, and I know it may seem like how's he possibly making this comparison? We had 173 co-sponsors on the Clean Water Protection Act. We could not get a committee hearing. Now, they have 173 co-sponsors on this act, and they will have committee hearings until they are blue in the face.
Okay, well, I mean, it's just stunning. And I also heard that horrible, ugly, chinless Mitch McConnell is seriously trying to work on a way to have a effing vote for, you know, repealing the health care bill. What happened to the jobs, Bob?
No, we're not so interested in those anymore, are we?
Isn't that amazing? I all of a sudden there's no discussion about jobs. You know, the whole thing is just in disarray because I see that President Not Sure was out there trying to tell somebody not to run. Bitch, there's 2 million people in the street.
Yeah, I think
they're not running. Wow.
But those 2 million people don't have $1.5 billion worth of leverage. See how it works?
I guess, but I just was thinking, this is way up north. I'm looking at these pictures, and I'm hearing somebody say, oh, you need to, and this bitch on TV, not Obama, but the president or dictator of Egypt, well, I'm going to die, and yeah, you may die real soon. You know what I'm saying? What planet?
Yeah, may get Ceausescu'd, as you noted.
No, I'm like, oh, this, and then the U.S., they really, I don't know what they're doing, because that was weak. It's like, we don't want you to run. That ain't what these people in the street want.
No, they want him to leave.
No, they want him to go. And as far as I can tell, that's what they're going to settle for. How in the world you get that many million?
The Egyptian people have gotten all Shakespearean all of a sudden. It's stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once.
No, that's what I'm saying. And so to hear the sort of these people over here gibbering on, it's like, dude, they way past you know?
Yeah, missed it by this much. It's one of those Maxwell Smart things. Hey, I got to take you backwards just for a minute, Sandra, because this came in from News Ninja Gene.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of the discussion about Florida and Arizona, and you know, I thought that little sting that Bloomberg and his pals did was pretty sharp.
Interesting. Yeah, so at least that was a good waste of time on that. I liked it, yeah.
Well, in the midst of all of that, when we're sitting here trying to have a civilized conversation about whether or not 16-year-old girls get to be 17-year-old girls and 9-year-old girls get to be 10-year-old girls, then there's South Dakota. A handful, this just in from News Ninja Gene, a handful of South Dakota lawmakers have introduced a bill in the South Dakota legislature that would require every one of the state's citizens over the age of 21 to own a firearm.
Yeah, I vaguely saw that. I didn't catch what state it was in, but it was like too much for my sensibilities. I had to click on.
I know, but
wow. And what's the makeup of that?
Well, here's the reason why, and this is one of those moments when you have to crawl inside the teabagger brain. And granted, it's
wow.
Creepy as hell. It's like walking in a sewer.
Yeah, that sounds like
Well, okay, here's the reasoning. Do I or the other co-sponsors believe that the state of South Dakota can require citizens to buy firearms? Of course not, explained State Representative Hal Wick, one of the bill's 5 sponsors. But he continued. But at the same time, we do not believe the federal government can order every citizen to buy health insurance.
Listen.
Don't you love that?
That's amazing. Listen, why don't they, you know, get rid of the mandate and let's have a public option? You understand what I'm saying?
I'm all for it, except for what this Judge Vinson in Florida did yesterday. Because his holding was that because it's in, because the man, he held that the mandate is inseverable. And once he reached the conclusion that the mandate was inseverable, he took the next step and said, then the whole thing has to die.
Was this some, is this some based on some commerce clause manipulation too?
Truth be told, it's based on the legal reasoning of the Family Research Council, Sandra. I kid you not.
No, but let's be honest. Unless I'm like completely smoking and I stopped a while ago, this shit will go to the Supreme Court and die. They are not gonna mess with that free money.
No. Scalia and Roberts and Alito and they're gonna be loving some insurance money.
Yeah, that shit ain't going. They can, you know, all these people can hoop and holler at the state level, but if that goes to the Supreme Court, trust and believe. They're going to say, oh, no, the mandate's fine, right?
I think Scalia even sort of hinted at that when he was brought in to lecture the teabaggers by Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, no, anyway, I mean, that's just, you know, I'm just thinking that that would be the case because, you know, these dumb, I don't know what kind of game they're trying to play. Because the mandate is like a godsend to these insurance companies. So, you see what I mean? The corporate is versus the rest of us again. And we know.
Well, I mean, it really is. It's 30 million new customers.
Right. And even if you can't afford it, there's some subsidies to make you afford it. And so that's a giveaway to private corporations. And as last time I heard, they were winning every hand.
Well, that's about the size of it, yes.
Anyway, I only got one more thing to tell you. So, you know, I can't pronounce the dude's name. He's, like, all so much fun. In the Ivory Coast, that bitch that won't leave?
Oh, yeah, I can't either.
Okay, well, that fool reneged on some Eurobonds. He said, too bad, so sad. Now, the key about this is, I mean, the Eurobonds, I mean, you know what a Eurobond is, right?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, so that's the big news because is Ireland watching? You see what I mean? That's the haircut we've been waiting for. I don't care if it happened in the Ivory Coast or Timbuktu. The fact that somebody said there's the first time in a year that someone's reneged on some fucking bonds. So it's just something.
And the question is, what? Because once you've done that, you stand there and say, and what are you going to do about it?
Well, what are you going to do about it? And this is the thing. That's what, you know, I was like, when I read that, I thought, well, that's interesting. I'll just file that away. That was in Bloomberg. And they got this fool looking crazy. And I can't believe it because he just took a bank. He confiscated a bank the other day. And the other day, he took an electric company. This is like a comedy hour, this Ivory Coast, although it's not for the people in the Ivory Coast, but reading about this fool is incredible.
It really does. The first thing that comes to mind is Ireland, Greece,
right.
Portugal, and somewhere somebody is feeling a little uncomfortable right now.
Well, and the thing, and yesterday I saw a little brief story of rumors of war. That Greece is in negotiations to reduce the interest and a haircut might be on offering. So, you know, shit is unraveling. And don't believe that this madness in Egypt isn't weighing on folks. Because I just saw the Fed say, oh, we're not gonna fuck with that rescission. So they backed off of that. Now, I'm not making the direct connection, but turbulence has a way of sort of quieting folks.
Well, it does.
You know.
Well, what I loved out of the Ivory Coast story, though, was when, how do you say it? Is it Gbagbo?
Yeah, I think it's Gbagbo. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's
Gbagbo. Yeah, Gbagbo.
I'm not too sure, you know, sort of this French, but I don't know. Anyway, yeah.
He said, well, now we're backing out on the bonds, but we're going to make the payment.
Right. Me too.
We got the money. We've been paying our civil servants. I don't have a date yet, but we're definitely going to pay.
Yeah, I'm going to make that payment, too, on all these student loans. Yeah. I got got your check right here.
Right. You know, just as quick as all six numbers come up on the hot lotto, you're getting paid. I have every intention in the world.
Yeah, no, this is, you know, like I said, you don't really see, you know, you don't see much Bond. This is always their worst nightmare, the haircut, you know. So, anyway.
Oh, and, well, Texas Betsy just gave me a pronouncer on this guy.
Oh, uh-huh.
She says GB makes the preceding vowel long. So, there's a little irony involved here. His name's Goodbye Go.
Anyway, the dude didn't win the election, though. This is another Bush v. Gore. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Go. And the people been, like, in the streets. I mean, the dude, I can't even believe he's still there. I'm like, God. So, and I think maybe, you know, he might be in cahoots with, Mubarak, because they must be talking.
Really?
You know, I shouldn't even make a joke about it because none of it's funny, but, you know, it's just sort of looking at the huge world stage, you know, it's kind of turbulent.
But I love the fact that every time one of these stories pops up, there's some sort of commodities market that is seen, that is held out there as a reason for us to get gouged. And in the Ivory Coast story, there's this. Cocoa prices have hit one-year highs on concern the political crisis is disrupting exports after the European Cocoa Association and Federation of Cocoa Commerce Limited said there is a significant slowdown in flows from the country.
Well, I don't know what's up because I thought...
That Hershey bar is going to get pricey.
I thought that silver and gold, or haven't they taken a dip lately? Anyway, I mean, no, what it is... None of it makes sense. That's the thing you have to kind of understand. If you try to make sense of it, you're not going to get ahead. Like, I have some Intel stock, and I looked at it, and I thought, oh, my God. But I won't look at it anymore because, you know what I mean? The good performance this past quarter is going to be some sort of disaster the next. You know what I'm saying? It's never... I don't know.
I thought of you the other day because over at Crooks and Liars they had a posting yesterday. Susie Madrak, who does some really, really good work. The headline: "The era of cheap food is coming to an end. Blame Wall Street hedge funds." And she says, "Yet another stick in the spokes of the geopolitical world wheel. And of course, climate change has nothing to do with the extreme weather affecting crops around the world, and neither does the fact that Wall Street hedge fund managers have allegedly been locking up the commodities market, driving up the cost of food. That's because we live in America where reporters never ask rude questions."
No, but see, the thing is, unfortunately, you know, we're not battling against, you know, the evil empire, Soviet Union, or whatever. We now seem to literally be battling against this finance capitalism.
Right. Predatory so-called free market.
Yeah, that's what we're not, you know, it seems to definitely be a battle because when they can cause up to 25 countries to tell their people, sorry, you're starving, that's war.
Yeah, it is. It's the kind of stuff that the UN Charter and the laws concerning war crimes prevent nation states from doing, but there is not a damned thing to prevent private capital from doing.
That's what you have haircuts for. That's why every time I see an article like this, I will bring it to your attention because that is what will fight against it. And also, I heard that Pigs and Davos was seriously talking about, well, you need to start raising interest rates, you know, because now they're starting to get a little bit worried about inflation, and inflation is, you know, a debtor's best friend.
Right.
Anyway, so can you believe they're demanding? I mean, it's just no end to these people's chutzpah.
But the question is, without resorting to notions of things that I would privately like to see, for instance, happen to the royal family of Saudi Arabia, what's the remedy? Because even the European Union, which has at least a slightly less dysfunctional regulatory scheme, even they can't get a handle on this.
But see, the thing is, you really have to keep in mind that you have Merkel, who made the mistake of mentioning that, oh, well, you know, in 2013, you know, some of these bondholders are going to have to take a hit. And then they started effing with the market, you know what I'm saying? So she should have kept her mouth shut. But there's no way that, because at Davos they said, oh, we need to generate $100 billion or $100 trillion more of debt. That's all they ever talk about. The world can't afford this debt creation. It seems to be their only solution for everybody.
You know, Andy just noted to me in an email, just by way of an example, the Koch brothers took a $300 million inheritance each from their daddy, the one who fronted the formation of the John Birch Society. And in the course of 30 years, have turned it into a $42 billion fortune for each of them. Now, you know what? That can't happen if you're playing with a straight deck. That can't happen without loaded dice.
No, and I like what Malloy was saying about take them people's money. And you know what? Years ago, you would be like aghast hearing that sort of conversation from anybody. But I swear to God, you have, when Egypt is 90 and the U.S. is 42.
Yeah.
In wealth, you know.
And I know that, you know, right wingers just, their blood runs cold when people say stuff like this. But really. What does a human being need with 40, one human being, what does one human being need with $42 billion in liquid assets?
And the thing is, especially when the world is just drowning in debt, there is no way, and think about Egypt, that this situation can go on indefinitely. And what you're going to get, especially in a country like the U.S., I mean, that discrepancy is, I went to that CIA, I mean, I was like, that's horrifying. You can't do it. People won't have anything to any purchasing power. You see, I mean, there's so many bad things that will come out of this. Anyway, I don't know.
Well,
if
people stay in the streets in Egypt, Sandra, won't that crash the Egyptian economy all by itself?
Well, no, I guess that's what's going on anyway. It's having really bad impacts, but on the other hand, though, so many of those people are living on $2 a day. Do you realize that?
Yes.
So this is what they've lost. This is what we were talking about before, is that there is no backstop to the neoliberal policies when they're in full effect. And that's what you get. So, I mean, I really don't know, but I noticed that King Abdullah, whatever the hell his name is, he fired his... peoples and lowered or introduced some more stuff.
I found that more than a little bit interesting. A preemptive cabinet sacking.
Mm-hmm.
So that he doesn't, you know, but that didn't seem to mollify people in Egypt.
Well, no, and it may not. I mean, we may be looking at a 1989 type of situation.
But is there a difference? Let me ask you this, Sandra. Is there a difference between a monarch and, for all intents and purposes, Abdullah in Jordan is an absolute monarch. Is there a difference between how it happens in a monarchy versus how it happens in a straight-up dictatorship?
I don't know. I mean, if he's engendered some love from his people, it might be a plane ride as opposed to Romania, but... You know, it's sort of, you know, these sort of revolution type things. If you look at the French situation, you know, it's momentum. You know, momentum is really key. So, I'm not too sure. I have no idea where this is going, but I did read reports that there's some stirring in Syria. Now, see, that's interesting to me too.
And see, in that one, I just kind of see us taking advantage of it and. Busting loose with a little CIA dirty tricks action in Syria. But I don't know. Maybe, you know, because that's the so-called Ba'ath Party, as well. You know, the Ba'ath Party is what ran, Saddam's Iraq and ran Assad's Syria.
Well, the thing is, though, I think you can just focus on Egypt because it's the largest. I mean, we're talking a country of 90 million.
You're right.
You know?
And so and so the question is, you know, I really think, you know, what does it look like somewhere else? I mean, can you imagine what it must be like? And I was just thinking about this earlier today. Knowing the secret police structure that exists there and so forth, can you imagine the roundups that must be going on in Saudi Arabia right now?
It must be horrific. But what's interesting, though, is how once the people got going in Egypt, they were able to basically run them people off.
I just wonder if the situation is similar in Saudi Arabia, simply because the population is smaller and the secret police are a larger percentage. I mean, that's a culture that has been akin or accustomed for decades now to turning in their neighbors and to turning on each other. Oh, what? Your wife was seen out without her brother or her husband? Well, you need to be beaten by the secret police.
Right, but how much different is that than what was going on in East Germany, though, Bob?
Well, that was the first thing that came to mind, was the Stasi in East Germany.
I was even shocked the way that just sort of crumbled, just like a house of cards. So, the one thing you should know about those authoritarian situations, they're really brittle. It don't take too much once it gets going. Anyway, I mean, I don't know. This is all just conjecture on my part, but I can just say that the Western capitals, they must be tripping along with Jerusalem. That's all I can think.
To be a fly on the wall in Netanyahu's cabinet meetings, oh, wouldn't you?
Well, how funny is it him making noises about, we need to support the Egyptian regime? It's just like, wow.
Well, yeah, because how nutty is it when Benjamin Netanyahu and King and the King of Saudi Arabia come down on the same side of an issue?
Anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
All right. Take care, Sandra. It's been a great conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. About half past the 8 o'clock hour here on the East Coast. And thanks for the help to both Jim and Sandra because I'm a little silly. I'm a little dopey. I don't think the fumes are good for a person. I don't. I want to go back, if I may, and, you know, tell me otherwise. I want to go back to this issue of the Florida, I guess it's a Florida kind of night. I'm surprised haven't heard from Juanita. Hope she's not having computer troubles again. I want to go back to the Florida ruling yesterday regarding the Affordable Care Act. And I want to go there because of what I mentioned to Sandra about the sources of the judge's ruling. It is... This thing was really, really, really creepy when I read at Think Progress where the rationale for it came from. I mean, really creepy. Because it came from the religion industry. No joke, it really did. Roger Vinson is a Reagan appointee, no surprise, and was the case was brought before him to determine the constitutionality. He's a federal judge. Determine the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. And he used something called, a legal argument called severability, which comes from the word to sever, you know, to cut away from. In footnote 27 on page 65 of the ruling, he admits that he came up with his rationale by, quote, borrowing heavily from one of the amicus briefs filed in the case, for it quite cogently and effectively sets forth the applicable standard and governing analysis of severability. That amicus brief was filed by the Family Research Council. As Think Progress notes, the Family Research Council has been branded as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they know a little bit about hate groups. And their hate is directed primarily toward gay folks. First of all, you know, anybody can file an amicus brief. The American Association of Collectors of Toenail Clippings can file an amicus brief. But what is the Family Research Council, what business have they insinuating themselves into a case about the Affordable Care Act? What's their argument? That Jesus doesn't want people to have health care? Yeah, right, because in Matthew 25 he says, you visited me not when I was sick. Now, okay, as long as we only have to visit, we can do Jesus' work. There's nothing in there about us having to heal anybody. He did all the healing. Nobody else does any more healing. Listen to the language. This is language directly from Judge Vinson's opinion yesterday. Severability is a doctrine of judicial restraint, and the Supreme Court has applied and reaffirmed that doctrine just this past year. Generally speaking, when confronting a constitutional flaw in a statute, courts try to limit the solution to the problem, severing any problematic portions while leaving the remainder intact. The question of severability ultimately turns on the nature of the statute at issue. For example, if Congress intended a given statute to be viewed as a bundle of separate legislative enactment or a series of short laws, which for purposes of convenience and efficiency were arranged together in a single legislative scheme, it is presumed that any provision declared unconstitutional can be struck and severed without affecting the remainder of the statute. If, however, the statute is viewed as a carefully balanced and clockwork-like statutory arrangement comprised of pieces that all work toward one primary legislative goal, and if that goal would be undermined if a central part of the legislation is found to be unconstitutional, then severability is not appropriate. Okay? In essence, he plagiarized. And why would anyone be surprised that a Reagan appointee federal judge would be a plagiarist? He plagiarized the amicus brief by the Family Research Council. I read his language from the opinion. Severability is fundamentally a doctrine of judicial restraint. Generally speaking, when confronting a constitutional flaw in a statute, we try to limit the solution to the problem. It's almost a dead lift. And all of that business about deferring to the will of Congress that Scalia's out there prattling on about from time to time, yeah, that didn't happen. If you ever had a single doubt in your mind about the pervasive and poisonous impact of the right-wing religion industry on our civic life, here it is. Now, these are people who run the Family Research Council. It's run by Tony Perkins. Norman?
Yes, Mother Bates.
Tony Perkins is notorious, among other things, for having bought his email or his mailing list from David Duke. Yeah, that David Duke, the Klansman, the Republican Klansman from Louisiana. That's where the Family Research Council got part of its mailing list. They bought the Klan's list because right-wing religion industry, evangelical fundamentalism, has a whole lot in common with the Klan. They've got a set piece list of people that they hate and would like to see slaughtered in the streets. And they are bigots of the worst kind. And racists. And here's the Family Research Council, a 501c3 tax-exempt organization, filing amicus briefs in federal court in Florida, trying to make sure that people can't have access to health care. And they bill themselves as doing it in the name of Christ Jesus. Got it? For every decent thing that some liberal or progressive group wants to accomplish, whether it's protecting the rights of a woman to manage the functioning of her own body, or whether it is the right of the people to make sane regulations concerning who may and may not buy a handgun and how quickly they may obtain it, or whether it is the right of people in communities to stand up to a coal company, for instance. There is always a right-wing moneyed interest ready to throw a monkey wrench into the works and see that the will of the people is not done, but that the will of corporate America is. Let this sink in for a moment or two. This is the religion industry, hate-filled and infused with money and bigotry and prejudice and homophobia. This is the religion industry stepping to the plate for the teabaggers. There are no lines anymore on the right wing. They are all blended together. They are all the same thing. One can say that they're talking about Jeebus, and another one can say they're talking about our constitutional rights to bear arms. But they're all working the same sick fascist side of the street. And if you ever wanted clear and convincing and unassailable proof of it, there it sits, right smack dab in the middle of the decision rendered by Judge Roger Vinson that nobody in America who can't pay for for-profit health care should have for-profit health care. Maura writing in with an explanation that is by far more elegant and more simple than what I have put forth. Why the Family Research Council is inserting itself into the health care bill debate? Bob, because under the bill, the queers get health care. Does this anger you? Does this infuriate you? Far be it from me to tell you what to feel, but if it does not, I question, I question the functioning of your moral center if it doesn't. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I can't help wondering how long it will be before I'll see a story about this asshat goober who wanted to blow up a mosque. How long will it be before I find out that someone from the Alliance Defense Fund or one of these other right-wing the legal industries has stepped up and provided him his defense because every American has the right to hate the Muslims, just like they've got the right to hate the queer. Because it's in the Constitution and the Bible. You doubt? Put a little dot on the calendar. We'll count the days until we find out that it happens. News Ninja Gene's not real good about setting up RSS feeds for this kind of stuff to come into him. Let me know when it hits, would you, Gene? Thanks. to the phones. Or not. Lost it. Darn. It's a real bright blinking neon lighted sign. This way lies madness. Unfortunately, there's madness to go around. Here's our food porn portion of the program. I love rice. I love rice. My two favorites are jasmine rice and basmati. Coming up a close third would be that beautiful sticky sushi rice from Japan. Basmati's my number one, though. Those beautiful long grains and that gorgeous fragrance. Guess what? Don't get too fond of it for too long. An experiment by Indian agriculture scientists points to the enormous effect global warming could have on the fragrant basmati rice. Basmati, Sanskrit for the fragrant one, may not lose just its aroma, the famous long grains may get shorter, say scientists. H. Patak, principal investigator of Indian Agricultural Research Institute's Climate Change Challenge program, said the Tarawari basmati, grown in research fields in Delhi, did not grow long enough and wasn't as fragrant as it should have been when cooked. He said global warming may be to blame for the disappointing basmati produced in the 2006-2007 experiment. Temperatures that year crossed the 26 degrees Celsius mark in September when the basmati flowers, and 15 to 20 days later when the grain begins to fill out, because of which a shriveling of the grain was seen. Now, I'm just a little old hillbilly sitting in the middle of the Appalachians who happens to have a passion for good rice. But when the basmati goes to hell in India, that means a hell of a lot more than Bob can't get himself the rice he likes in Appalachia. It means famine! Patak says the IARI has been receiving complaints from farmers about a sudden warming damaging rice crops. Temperatures in the 700 acres that make up the IARI campus in the heart of Delhi are similar to those in Haryana and western Uttar Pradesh, which grow Tarawari basmati. Therefore, what the scientists saw at IARI will be replicated in these areas. Their only hope is to bring planting dates forward so that high temperatures in September don't affect the crop. The only problem is that when you do that, well, you might not have the appropriate growing season then. It goes on and on and on. Basmati rice. But hey, you know what? If you tune in, as my head writer David in Tennessee noted, if you tune into the Savage Wiener, he'll tell you that he likes global warming because it means he can get locally grown peaches in December in Northern California. Idiots! Idiots! They don't understand that there's not a home planet for them to go to. These thugs that are destroying the one we're on. The mothership ain't coming. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Pretty good, Tony. What's up?
Good. You're on fire tonight, man. What's up?
No, I'm kind of down tonight. It's huffing all of these fumes.
You know, it's funny when you talk about global warming. I wish they would change it to climate change. Because when he named it global warming...
Well, it is. I mean, I prefer global climate catastrophe.
Yeah, that's true. I just joined you a little while ago where you talked... I'm assuming you were talking about the situation in Egypt earlier today.
Yes.
You know, I've been thinking, I was working it, I was thinking the Saudi family has to be crapping their pants right now.
That's what I've been thinking.
Because, as Egypt goes, I mean, Egypt is Egypt, and of course we realize the importance, but, I mean, do you think their days are numbered?
I sure hope so. Well, it depends. It depends on how strong their police state apparatus is and how quickly it dissolves in the face of popular pressure.
Because
the Saudis will get out and lop some heads off. You know, they won't just shoot into a crowd in the street. They'll drag them up to the chopping block and hack their heads off.
Well, what do you think? You think for some reason if they manage to be overthrown, which I seriously doubt, but if they do, I mean, they're friends with Bush. Can you imagine if Bush gave him sanctuary? What that would say about him?
Well, remember they called Prince Bandar Bush.
Yeah, remember they used to walk around holding hands all the time?
Oh, and amongst the bluebells and the kissing each other on the mouth.
Yeah. I was listening to, I'm asking you these questions because you know more about the backgrounds of these people. Now, one of the guys involved in this who might either take over, he was a fighter pilot? Which one of the guys?
Mubarak? He was a hero of the Egyptian Air Force.
Yeah, that's it. I was listening to Savage today, and Savage said he thinks Mubarak's an honorable man because he was a fighter pilot. Right?
You can't be a fighter pilot without being an honorable man. Got to be an honorable man to drop bombs from 40,000 feet.
So I wanted to say to him, so he's an honorable man, but I guarantee you, that speech he made today, if Ayman al-Zahiri would have said that same speech, right?
Oh.
He wouldn't be an honorable man, but he's a doctor. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, all too well.
Yeah. Because you like this guy, he's an honorable man.
Right.
Al-Zahiri, he's a doctor, which means he knows how to save lives, but because he's not saying what you like, he's a scumbag. See what I mean?
You pretty much nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are twisting all this stuff around, and, you know, like you said, I believe you said this yesterday, or maybe today, the Egyptian people have never been free. Am I correct on you saying that?
Yeah, I said that.
Yeah, was it today or yesterday?
Yesterday.
Okay. You know, I never thought about it like that. I mean, can you imagine, like, in your entire history, you've never been free?
The same thing with the Saudi peoples. The same thing with the Yemenis.
I had an argument with one of the guys that worked today about what was going on over there. And I asked him, I used your line. I said, can you imagine, dude, if somebody came in here and they declared martial law and it's been that way for 25 years, wouldn't you get sick of it eventually? Right? And they were like, well, you know, they don't want to say the answer because they don't want to lose the argument. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So they'll say something like, well, it depends. I'm like, really, really, it depends.
And what's it depend on?
Yeah, you see what I'm saying?
What is it that makes being subjected to a brutal dictatorship okay? Because remember, Tony, we used the imaginary weapons of mass destruction as the premise for invading Iraq, but at the end of the day, the reasoning was, he's a brutal dictator who kills his own people. Well, suddenly that doesn't matter so much with Mubarak for the right wing.
Well, yeah, that works, huh? I mean, these guys...
Maybe it's because Hosni Mubarak didn't try to kill my daddy.
You know, it's funny. I don't understand how... Okay, you've been doing this for a while. And you, if you know as well as I do that if you one day decided to sell out and suddenly become conservative, you'd be on 500 stations.
I like to think I would, yes.
And you'd be probably...
That's that alternate universe, Bob.
And if I can borrow a word from...
He's got a goatee, kind of like Spock. Yeah.
Yeah. If I could borrow a line from Star Wars, well, more wealth than you could imagine. You know what I'm saying? You'd probably... I mean...
Yeah.
As a man who has a family, which you do, and a wife, which you do, and I've met her, she seems really, like, mega cool. It shows what kind of principled person you are, because a man wants to take care of his family. He wants to provide the best they can. And you know as well as I do that if you sold out, you'd be, for lack of a better word, extremely well off. You know, these guys, I wonder what he...
Well, that's why these guys make so much money, Tony. Let me be clear about that. They make this kind of money because that kind of money takes the sting out of being a total, miserable, sellout SOB.
Nobody's right 100% of the time. Nobody is. Everybody is. There's always two sides. Can they really be that, for lack of a better word, lack of principled, to just say how much money? Like, you remember one time Eddie Murphy...
Sure they can. There's a lot of people. Yeah.
One time Eddie Murphy said, I'm not going to do this movie. It sucks. How much money? You see what I'm saying? I don't know. Where do you draw the line?
I don't know because I've never had to cross it. Although I must admit, a person of whom we are both a mutual fan, Tony Bourdain in his Medium Raw.
Yeah.
He notes along the way. He said, "You know, I used to talk about people. Oh, look, he's sold out."
Yeah.
And I felt real noble about it. And he said, "But that's until somebody came along and made the offer to me."
Yeah.
And then it turned into a matter of, well, you know, I want my daughter to have riding lessons. I want her to go to a ballet school. I want to send her to a good college. Where do I sign? And the conclusion he reached is, it's not that I'm not a sellout. It's that nobody's named my price yet.
How do you keep them, for lack of a better word, selling out?
Well, not having anybody make the offer is a real easy way, Tony.
Yeah, but I don't know you personally, but I know you well enough. I think you have too much of a conscience, personally.
Oh, I've played that fantasy game with myself. It's the same game that you play when you go buy your lottery ticket or your Keno ticket. You know, between the time that the number is drawn and the time that you've purchased it, there's this window where you might be rich. And then you start going through the laundry list of what you're going to do with it. And to the same extent, see, way back when I did terrestrial radio, I was bought off the air. But I guess they hated me so much that instead of offering me the money just to go away, the coal companies went to the radio station and said, you know, why don't we give you twice as much money as you're getting to air this guy?
Can you imagine businesses that would actually pay somebody twice as much money to shut somebody up?
Well, that's what happened. That's what happened. But I've wondered, you know, there's not going to be any Massey Energy anymore. Those dirty bastards have been bought out.
Cool.
But you still have to ask the question, you know, what would happen? You know, somebody walks up and says, hey, Bob, you know, we don't like what you're saying. How much would it cost us to make you not say it anymore? And you say, you know what? $150 million is fine.
Yeah, you would take it and then you'd do it again anyway. You wait a couple of years.
Then they'd come and sue you or shoot you or something that. So it's best. It's best not to play the game with those people.
How much time you got left?
Very little, as a matter of fact. Almost none.
Okay, good. Listen, if I don't, you're leaving Thursday, right?
Yeah.
There won't be a show Thursday.
No show Thursday. No show Friday. John may be filling in.
Okay, if I don't talk to you tomorrow. I hope you guys have a really good time, all right?
Well, thank you. There will be many photographs. I don't know when I'll get to upload them, but there will be many photographs.
Yeah, put a couple on the website. That'd be cool. See you, bro.
All right. See you, Tony. Bye now. Bye. And that brings us to an end. Thanks, everybody, for putting up with me. I was a little dippy tonight. Don't ever breathe this stuff I'm breathing. I just know it's not good for anybody. But I will be here tomorrow night. It'll be the last night before the great trip. And, hopefully we'll have some good conversation and have some fun. Thanks to everybody who makes this all happen. Thanks to you who contribute to make it possible for us to get from literally month to month. We are at the beginning of a new month, and that means new fundraising, please. I am proud to say that we have brought in the fundraising has begun, but I won't be here past tomorrow to remind anyone. So I will ask you, please, to just, if you can, let's do it now, so that I won't have to come back and look and go, oh, hell, how do we get to March? Because when I'm not talking about it, it tends to be forgotten about. But thank you to everyone who does contribute to make this happen. Thank you so very, very much. And thanks to everybody who works on the technical side, from Lottie in the chat room to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com, our Southeast correspondent. Get to feeling better, Reverbo, you hear? Good. He'll be back at it soon. Thanks to John Fox. I hope he can fill in some. It will beat the hell out of reruns if he can. Thanks to Ben Birch. I hope he's okay with the blizzard of 11 blowing through his neck of the woods. Stay warm and comfortable and inside, all of you, Ben. We love you. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. Agnes and I have been packing our Clean Coal is a Dirty Lie and Save the Endangered Hillbilly t-shirts. We will be wearing them on the ship. I will make sure that everybody who attends the Progressive Voices cruise knows about the Appalachian apocalypse. We'll be passing out some I Love Mountains buttons, too. So it's time for Rick Smith. Stick around. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.